AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high-quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear-headed, full of energy, and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing The Fighting Cock, for example. One scoop, once a day, before breakfast, and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee, because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
GEICO asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, GEICO can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
GEICO asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, GEICO can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. Podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
So it's a very special episode of the Fighting Cock podcast because today I'm joined by none other than Paul Robinson, former Spurs goalkeeper, legend of the Park Lane. How are you doing, Paul?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, it's our pleasure. Absolutely our pleasure. And can you believe it that Spurs are in the final of the Champions League? Is that something you'd ever think you'd hear?
Not in my lifetime. Well, I'd like to. Yeah. But the way that the Champions League campaign started, if you like, this year, you certainly wouldn't have said that we'd have made the final. Getting through the group as we did, you know, it was a huge relief to get through the group. But then to actually look at us now and to be in the final and to the adversity that we've overcome to get to the final, it's as though there are names on the cup, if you like.
Yeah, it does feel like that a little bit. It's been a mad ride, isn't it? Because, you know, like you said, in the group stages, 1 point from three games, had no right to get out of that, really. Had to go to Barcelona and get a result out there. Rely on Inter Milan drawing at home to PSV. We get through, and then obviously we're drawn against Dortmund, who were absolutely flying at the time, top of the Bundesliga. And actually, our defeat of them broke them. They actually lost the league to Bayern Munich, having been like 9 points clear when we were playing them. How did you sort of deal with or figure out the result against Man City, how that game went? Because it was crazy. You know, they were the much better side at the Etihad.
But obviously that goal in the last minute got overturned, the VAR goal, and we were through. That was a lot to take on.
I think it's been different from the league. I think they've been able to separate the Champions League and the league, if you like. And I think going into the Manchester City game, they took the performances against Dortmund, as you've said, as you know, as a benchmark, if you like. This is how we play in Europe. This is how we win in Europe. And I think that the huge thing for me against Manchester City was winning the home leg in the new stadium. Aguero missing the penalty like he did early on, and then all of a sudden we believed, if you like, we believed that that we could do it. And to get the home win was huge. But even me with my Spurs hat on and my Spurs heart, you think going away to the Etihad playing Manchester City, the way that they're playing, the team that they've got, 1-0 is probably not enough. You know, if you're completely honest, you're thinking, do you know what, if we get anything from this, we'll do really well. You know, playing against the City team, the quality that they've got, but to be able to go there and perform the way that we did and get a result was unbelievable. And as has the whole Champions League campaign been all season.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to go back to the first game against Man City. As obviously a goalkeeper who's played in front of defenders, what did you make of that penalty decision? Because the way Rose shaped up to block the ball, I get that his arms are out, but the ball was shot at him very quickly. There's not much he could do. What did you take from
a completely neutral point of view? It was never a penalty. You look at the players' reactions on the pitch. There's a lot of the time you can see and you can gauge whether it was a penalty by players' reactions. Referees, to a certain extent, haven't played the game. And as players, you look at the players on the pitch and you see the players' reactions, and there was no reaction. There was no appeal for a penalty. There's a new law now coming in next year for handball, where it says, I think the law says by the word, it's something like the hand has to be outside the player's natural silhouette, which I think that was possibly in the referee's mind when he looked at it. But I think to give a penalty in the way that he did, it was a very, very harsh decision. And for me, it was an incorrect decision. And for Spurs to react and come back the way that we did in that game, you know, it was credit to him, credit to the manager and the team.
The game against Ajax, you know, the first 10... Actually, his first 20 minutes, Ajax looked incredible. The way they put the ball about, I was like watching. It was probably the best opening 20 minutes I've seen against the Tottenham side that I can remember.
I wasn't surprised. I've watched Ajax a few times this year. I've seen them in the group stages, seen them in the knockout stages, and they're putting Dutch football back on the map. They're bringing the youth team players back in, the young players coming back in. De Ligt at 19, centre back, captain in the team, youngest Ajax captain in the Champions League. The players that they've got there, the youth blended with the experience, they've been a fantastic team. De Jong as well in there, Neres, the attacking prowess that they've got. And I was asked before the Spurs game, you know, have they got an easy draw? Is it a great draw for Tottenham in the semi-final? And I'm like, no, it's a really, really tough draw. They're playing against a very, very good, strong team. And anybody who watched Ajax over this season will tell you the same. And unfortunately for Ajax now, you know, people are going to come and pick their players. Mm. That team will get picked apart because they are such good players. You know, De Jong going off to Barcelona, and I suspect there'll be passages new for a lot of their players. But it was a very, very tough draw for Spurs. And to come through the game like they did and to come back in the way that they did, I don't think anybody could have seen that.
No, I know. De Ligt is actually, today it came through that he's joining Barcelona as well.
And no surprise.
No. And Van der Beek looks like he'll be going on as well. And I've got a lot of time for Ajax. You know, I love the way they play football. And I really didn't see a way back into it. As soon as they scored, I thought, we can't compete with this. This is a new way. It was almost like a new way of playing football. The energy, the speed at which they were moving, none of them stopped. The movement was incredible. And we brought Sissoko on. Changed our shape somewhat.
The most improved player
of
the last 18 months.
Can you?
It was. I actually reminded me of the Leeds team that I played in years ago when we got to the semi-final of the Champions League. They were kind of a youthful, exuberant team. They played with quality but without fear. They were playing, you know, they're not Juventus out. They took care of Bayern Munich in the group stages. They put four past Real Madrid away. So you're looking at them and you have to take them seriously. And then you look back and you think, look, they're kids to an extent, but they're kids playing quality football at a top level, and they're not scared of or inferior of who they're playing against. They were looking forward to taking on the challenges, taking each game as it comes, the oldest
cliche in football, but they literally they were fearless, and it was so nice to see a refreshing change. And you can see that to an extent in the Dutch national team as well. What Ronald Koeman's done with the national team, he's blended youth and experience together. You know, the likes of Van Dijk in there, and he's brought these young players, De Ligt, next to him. So the same as he's done with Joe Gomez at Liverpool, the Dutch national team has hugely benefited from these youngsters coming through at Ajax.
Yeah, absolutely. You just mentioned about Leeds. So, forgive my memory's not great, and obviously it's a different football club to Tottenham, but was you was a part of the Leeds set up during that run?
Yeah, during the Champions League semi-final run.
What was the club like then? Because that I remember, you know, I was quite young then.
So was I, but
you were old enough to play professional football. I was barely old enough to. I'll leave that there. But I remember it being like a fantastic thing. Like, you got to the semi-finals of the Champions League, and it felt like a similar sort of story that Tottenham had and Ajax had as well.
It was a huge achievement for us at the time. It was a team that was put together of young, quality, talented players who went on a run that was probably not expected of them. Pretty much similar to the Ajax team. Mm. Not to dwell on the Leeds thing, the time at Leeds, but it was a time that was, as I say, unexpected. And I think the problem that we had was we didn't qualify for the Champions League again the next season through the league. Yeah. People say, oh, it's because Leeds didn't win the Champions League, all the problems started. But I think the bread and butter was we didn't qualify through the league for the Champions League. But to be on that bandwagon and to be part of that at that time, it was, you know, it was one of the very, very special moments of my career.
So, the story now looking back, I won't focus too heavily on Leeds, but I do find it fascinating, is that Reesdale, was it that he just loved the club and he speculated?
He followed his dream. Yeah. There's a lot of criticism about Peter Ridsdale, and there's a lot of bad press and things said about him and his ways of business, but he followed his dream, and he was within an inch of achieving his dream, if you like. And everybody, like I said, just repeating myself, people say, oh, it's because Leeds didn't win the Champions League that year. Mm. It's not because Leeds didn't win the Champions League. It's because we didn't qualify for the Champions League again. Mm. Because the club was financed, the club was bankrolled with the players we had, you know, the playing staff, the management, everything else was all geared up for the Champions League. And not because we didn't win it, it was because we didn't qualify again to play in the Champions League the following season, which the revenue that the Champions League brings in, as everybody knows nowadays, is phenomenal.
And that's why it was so sort of impressive and important that Spurs managed to do it this year, because this run, if we didn't beat Liverpool, would have really not meant a great deal if we hadn't qualified for the Champions League this year.
I think what Mauricio has done with the team and his remit from Daniel this year, moving into the new stadium, not having a penny to spend and doing what he's done, I genuinely think his remit was finishing the Champions League. We need to go into that new stadium, the Champions League football, to achieve what he's done again. I think this is his fifth season now. Okay, he's not won anything. Mm. But you look at the way that club has progressed, not just the team, but the club as a whole. The trust that the chairman's got in him, the relationship that the manager and chairman have got with one another. There's not many managers that would have sat there and gone, okay, I don't need to spend anything, that's fine, I'll go again. Yeah. The relationship that they've got and the way that the club's been able to progress is, you know, it's an outstanding achievement. For Daniel as well, for a chairman to be able to do that. There's a stigma about Daniel, the way he does business and the way that he runs the ship. But you couldn't want for anyone better in charge of your football club. For what he's done and for what he's brought to that club.
What was your dealings like with Daniel Levy? How did you take him as a person? Because from a fan's perspective, he's like elusive. He wants to get on with his job. He runs the football club the way he does. And I think, for one, he's done an incredible job.
Very much so.
But how did you find dealing with him when you played him at Tottenham?
Daniel is very personal when you speak to him. He's a very family orientated man. Wouldn't want to do business with him over the phone or over email. wouldn't want to do deals with him. But he's got the club at heart, as you can see by what he's done. Mm. And, you know, he's very, very good for Tottenham Hotspur, and it's the right fit. And the fact that he doesn't crave the limelight, he doesn't like the limelight, he doesn't like the press and publicity, but he speaks when he's needed to speak, and he sets the record straight when needed to. And I think he's been brilliant for the club.
I agree massively. To see the change when he took over and where we are now, it's an amazing thing. Harry Kane looks like he's going to be fit for the final, it seems that way. And if he does play, it looks like Lucas Moura will have to drop out. What would you do if you was the manager of Tottenham right now, Harry Kane was fit for the final?
This we're not privy to information of how fit Harry Kane is, and we all know how important that he is to the team. But what Lucas Moura did in the semi-final, you run the risk of, for want of a better phrase, losing him if you leave him out. You know, to do what he did to put us into the final and then to lose your place in the team, he'd have to be a very, very understanding player to kind of take that on the chin and go again. It's all probably dependent on how fit Harry Kane actually is. He's missed 2 months worth of football now. If he's fit enough to join the squad and if he's fit enough to be in the squad, it's brilliant for Tottenham. If he doesn't start, it's not a disaster. You look at the way that, say, that Moore has played, you look at Son, the way that they've played in the last few games without Harry Kane, you know, you can't question that. And to have Harry on the bench with Llorente, there's a way of changing the game. Llorente gives you a different option. You can go longer. If you're chasing a game, if say for instance, we go 1-2 down to Liverpool, or we need a goal in the last 10 or 15 minutes, who are you going to bring on? Harry Kane. It's not a bad option to have. So if he's fit, there's every chance he'll play. If he's not 100% fit because he's not played football for 2 months, if he's on the bench and he's there to turn to, it's really not a bad option to have should you need him.
Spurs are in your away dressing room. We're supposed to be in the home dressing room at the Bernabeu, and obviously the home dressing room is always a bit more comfortable. The away dressing room is less so, apparently. This is what we've heard. And anyway, they've swapped it around because where the supporters come into the stadium. What do you, does that impact a player, do you think, when, you know, if you're walking into a lovely dressing room and it's heated and it's comfortable, and then the away dressing room is less so? Do you think the players would get impacted by that sort of?
We're talking
so
about
trivial?
A brand new stadium. We're not talking about, listen, I spent the last 18 months of my career at Burnley, and that was a small dressing room. The showers were freezing cold, and you made it as uncomfortable as you can for the away team. But now you're looking at multi-billion-pound stadiums like Spurs stadiums. There will be very, very little difference in the home and away team dressing rooms. I suspect the home team will be kitted out in Madrid colours. It will all be Madrid orientated. The away team will just be darker colours and something different. There'll be no advantage to having the home or away team dressing room whatsoever. Gone are the days in football, like I say, where you make it uncomfortable for the away team coming. And the stadium wouldn't have been chosen if there was any kind of discrepancy between dressing rooms, if you like.
What did you think of that about you know, the ticketing situation in for the Champions League final? Obviously 17,000 each for both sets of fans. There's tons of Spurs fans getting out of there who haven't got tickets, travelling, you know, all manner of routes to get there. Do you think there's an issue around ticketing and certainly in like cup finals where there's so many go to sort of corporate sponsorship, and we know how important that is to football as well. So I can understand why it happens. But there has to be some sort of...
Yeah, but we're living in an age now where gone are the days where, you know, fans can turn around and say, we pay your wages, because the sponsorship from TV, you know, companies, different sponsors, etc., far outweighs anything like that. And for to hear that both sets of supporters have only got minimum ticket allocations, if you like, it's disappointing, because you wonder where the rest of the tickets are actually going and who's going. There's supporters of Tottenham Hotspur in their lifetime. This is probably a one-off for them that will never get there again. Liverpool, maybe so as well. You don't know what's going to happen. But it's an interesting way, well, interesting for want of a better word, to see how tickets are actually decided and who delegates the tickets. I was reading an article this morning saying, for, you know, varying off theme here, but Arsenal and Chelsea fans are sending tickets back. They've been allocated lesser amounts, okay, but they're in Azerbaijan, they're in Baku, and it's not as attractive as going to Madrid. But they've got a certain amount of tickets and they're sending tickets back due to the fact that the venue was decided pre-tournament, wherever it is, and they've decided not to go.
You've been to Baku, haven't you?
I've played in Baku, yeah, before the stadium was...
For England?
Before it is what it is now, yeah.
What was it like there?
It's different. That's where I tripped the fan up. Do you remember if you Google, one of the fans ran onto the pitch and he made a beeline for me. So I decided to trip him up and grab him till the stewards came. But in the new laws of the game now, I would be in breach of the laws on the pitch and I'd be sent off.
Really?
That's the new law, apparently, yeah. So players are governed by the laws of the pitch. Fans are governed by the laws of the land.
Right.
So if a player does that to a supporter, the referee's in his right to send you off. So I was walking a thin line at the time.
Bloody hell.
Unbeknown to me.
What was it like to play out there and like
it was a so-called lesser nation, if you like, at the time. Azerbaijan, the stadium was it wasn't anything like what it is now. I mean, the stadium's phenomenal now. It was like a League One, League Two stadium. The supporters were far away from the pitch, and the England supporters were there in the thousands as usual.
I want to talk a little bit about the dressing room at Tottenham when you were there. Like, what was it like? Because we had a really good side. It was starting to turn. We went from being a very mediocre club to things were happening for us. You know, Martin Jol came in and had a massive change to what we were doing and how we went about it. But how would you describe the changing room at Tottenham there?
It was a good changing room, really good changing room. It was young players, but experienced players. There was the likes of me, Ledley, Robbie Keane, Timu came in, Nuruddin Neighbour, he came in at the experience, but he was such a great guy, good guy to have around the place. And then, of course, Edgar came in, Edgar Davids. We had a really, really good changing room. And Martin Yoll at the time, he was the right man. You know, he was just a good fit. We had, you know, Jacques Santini came in, and his lack of English, I think, hampered him. I think his football knowledge was excellent, but he just couldn't get across the point that he wanted to get across. Whether he had enough time to be able to do that or not was, you know, that's another question. But when Martin came in, the players respected Martin. We loved working with him as a coach under Jacques, because he was working with him. And then when he was given the job, it was a perfect fit for the players, and we thoroughly enjoyed working under him.
So the Santini thing, from the stories I remember back then, it felt like he ran away from the club. Like was he just fired, or was it a mutual agreement? Do you know?
I can't remember the official statement, if you like, or what was had, but it seemed to be a very, very short reign.
13 games, I think.
I don't know whether it was him or whether it was the club or whether it was a mutual thing. I think it was kind of a mutual thing. I think the big problem was the language barrier.
Yeah.
There was a real problem with the language barrier. You could see his knowledge, you could see at times he was frustrated. And you can see exactly why Daniel appointed him, because of his track record, his history. He seemed to be the perfect fit at the time. But as I say, because of the language barrier and the difficulty of getting across what he wanted to get across, I think that probably let him down. But in hindsight, it was a good thing, because then Martin was shoehorned straight into the job.
So in terms of getting his point across, was it a case of having a translator next to him?
Yeah, he had a translator with him, yeah.
Well, so he would sit down and give us...
And it's always difficult when there's a manager giving you a team talk, and it's hard to get the passion and emotion across, through somebody else.
Yeah, and that's important, isn't it? To feel what
Of course it is, yeah.
Yeah.
It was for me as a player anyway.
Yeah. There was a lot of talk at half-time at the Ajax game about Harry Kane getting involved in the team speech. Pochettino kind of distanced himself from that discussion, apparently. But is it normal for a player to get involved in a half-time team talk?
Do you know what? The media make a lot out of such little things.
Do they?
As soon as a player does an interview after the game, somebody might say, oh, Harry Kane came in at half-time, says, come on, lad, sort yourself out. All of a sudden, Harry Kane did this great half-time team talk. It's very, very difficult unless you're there to interpret actually what went on. Mm. And the media do sensationalise a lot of things. I don't doubt for 1 minute he was there and spoke to the players in a certain way, but I don't think he was said anything different to what anyone else has said. Come on, lads, this is for one... Well, this is awful. Come on, sort yourselves out. You're this, you're that, you're the other. And it's what players say to one another at the time in the dressing room. And with him being there and as a captain and a figurehead, if you like, him coming in and he would have said that. A player does a post-match interview, turns around to the interviewer, says, oh yeah, Harry Kane came in and he had a da-da-da-da-da. All of a sudden, Harry Kane saved it.
Because that's the story,
I don't. I don't think for 1 minute he didn't say it. I don't think for 1 minute he wasn't there and wasn't part of it. But you can't take the credit away from a manager in that situation.
Just going back to Martin Yoll, I wanted to ask a question, because remember when he left the club or he was fired, it was a game against Getafe in the Europa League. And so as far as we understand it, he was sacked at halftime. Do you remember that? Okay, do you remember how it happened?
I remember the game. I really remember the game, because you can hear rumblings in the crowd.
So you didn't know anything either?
We had no idea, even at halftime or at the end of the game. I don't know how true that is. Even to this day, I don't know how true that is. But knowing Daniel like I knew him and know him, I don't think that's how he conducts business.
No.
I don't think that's how Tottenham Hotspur conduct business. And I can't for 1 minute think that that's anything anywhere near the truth, that happened at half-time.
Just before we finish, I just want to ask a question about how transfers happen, because it's fascinating from fans' perspective. Like, you're like, there must be all kinds of skullduggery and... like emails being sent and bids coming back and forth for a player, like perhaps on like coming towards the transfer end of the transfer window. What is it like? How would you just get a call from your agent and say, right, drive to this club? Do you have a say? Do you say, I don't want to go and move to...
Oh, all different times. Yeah, I was involved in a few different transfers. When I signed for Spurs, it was interesting. Spurs tried to sign me in January of the winter, the January transfer window, before I actually signed in the summer. I was down at White Hart Lane. Contract almost done, medical almost through, But Leeds at the time didn't want to sell me because of the predicament that they were in. So the agreement was, which Spurs agreed, do the deal, sell him, loan him back to Leeds for the rest of the season. So it was all going through. It was all great. It was all going to come to an end. That's it. I'd sign for Spurs, but be loaned back to Leeds. But then, catch 22, Leeds already had their allocation of loan players. So the deal couldn't go through. So my transfer to Spurs, in which was going to be in the winter transfer window, it never happened. So I shook hands with Daniel, parted ways, and just said, you know, hopefully see you again. And thankfully he came back for me in the summer. But there was nothing done at the time. It was all going to be done. I was going to be loaned back. Yeah. But Leeds wouldn't sanction the transfer because they didn't have anybody else and they needed me at the time for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And they weren't allowed to loan me back. Season before that, I could have signed for Aston Villa. Leeds, we won the last couple of games of the season. We won away at Highbury, off from memory.
It was Viduka.
Viduka and Kewell scored a couple of great goals. We won at Highbury, which kept us up. And I think it stopped them winning the league. I can't remember.
Yeah.
And then we went away at Charlton, which guaranteed us safety. And David O'Leary, my old manager at Leeds, he came to sign me for Villa. And it just wasn't right for me at the time. Personally and professionally, didn't really want to move to Birmingham. Villa was never on my radar. It wasn't a club that I wanted to play for. And Leeds was still in the Premier League. I'd been at Leeds since I was 13 and I was 23.
Mm.
So we'd stayed up at Leeds, and probably through rose-tinted glasses, I look back and go, do you know, we're in the Premier League again. I want to stay in the Premier League. My team are in the Premier League. I'd rather play for Leeds in the Premier League than I would Villa in the Premier League.
Mm.
Nothing to do with money or anything like that. It was just an opportunity to play for my team again in the Premier League, if you like. Hindsight, my move to Tottenham wouldn't have happened if I hadn't stayed at Leeds and would have gone down.
Yeah.
So it's all different things. There's a lot of swings and roundabouts.
Mate, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you. Thank you once again. Before we go, so that people get it, I don't know what the odds would have been like on Joel being sacked at half time, but I'm sure Fansbet would have run some markets at the time. But why are you involved in Fansbet? And obviously, we're massive fans of Fansbet because they support what we do as well.
That's the biggest thing for me. It's the giving back to the supporters. When the people initially came to me with the idea and to be heavily involved with the company, betting's not something that I'd ever been involved with, obviously, because as a footballer you're not allowed to bet on football.
Mm.
So because of that ban, I'd never bet on anything else, really. But then you come out of it and you realise the amount of people that do bet, with their accumulators and horses and different things. Yeah, but the company doesn't condone gambling, it just creates a different environment for people to gamble in. But at the same time, it gives 50% back to football supporters, which is the entire reason why I became involved. The clubs that I've played for, I've had a great relationship with the supporters, no matter where I've been. And to actually give something back to them and let them decide what they want to do with their own money, if you like.
Mm.
So you don't have to bet on football, you bet on golf, cricket, rugby, tennis, whatever you want to bet on, but you sign up and you register as a Tottenham Hotspur supporter, put your supporters club in, you get the drip down, you get the money into your supporters club, have a meeting, decide what you want to do with the money, whether you pay for tickets for underprivileged kids, whether you buy a new minibus for the Woking branch, for example, whatever you want to do. But it's money that people would normally be spending that would be disappearing into multi-billion pound gambling industries. You kind of filter down through losing bets.
Yeah, it's amazing. And just finally, we're going to win the Champions League, right?
Without a shadow of a doubt, yes.
Beautiful.
Team out of here, then. Yeah.
Oh shit, is it? I don't know, I can edit it, but I thought I hit the record.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.